Welcome to Phenomenal Woman. I'm your host, Janice Sutherland. Join me as we share the success strategies of phenomenal women achieving extraordinary success around the globe. From the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between, this is Real Talk by Real Women. We share with you the highs and lows of their journey and give you honest insight on how you can navigate same with confidence, integrity, and gain a little inspiration. As a leadership strategist, executive coach and business consultant, I have the pleasure of working with organizations and individuals, helping them to turn their goals into success. Hey everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman with me, your host, Janice Sutherland. Now, one of the real benefits of doing this show, as ever, is all the women I get to meet throughout the walks of life. Now, I probably meet some of these women in passing, but doing the interviews gives me the opportunity to get real up close and personal with women I've met who have just really impressed me or just had that little something, you know, about them that makes you want to get to know more. And my guest this week, Sarah Voyard, is no exception. Sarah is an authentic, energetic, passionate and driven visionary that has empowered men and women to let their true selves shine and take real control of their lives. For over a decade, she's been helping people transform their thoughts, enjoy fulfilling relationships, deepen their spirituality and find true purpose in life. As a certified life coach and master NLP practitioner, Sarah has developed a genuine familiarity with the intricacies of human needs, desires, and motivation. Her own experiences with blissful happiness, heartbreaking loss, and sincere growth allow her to connect with people in a way that gets to the roots of their deepest emotions so they can transform their life to the one they deserve and desire. From young adults to diplomats, Sarah's helped men and women from all walks of life align their lives with who they really are and what they really want. As the founder and CEO of SV Elite Coaching, Sarah creates an empowering and motivational space where people can drill down to who they really are and what they really want out of life. She firmly believes that you are your authentic self is always your best version and the only version that gets you true happiness and success. The unsettling feelings, relationships and lifestyles we experience are a result of the gap between who we really are and who we think we should be. Sarah's mission is to empower her clients to let their authentic selves shine so they can enjoy the lives they've always dreamed of. And it was a great conversation this week because, as I said, I got to learn a little bit more about Sarah, about the journey she's been on to find her own truth, and how she has had to overcome her own obstacles with her religious family and how she overcome them and be as successful as she is. So I do hope you enjoy this week's conversation. As ever, please, please, please feel free to review, rate, subscribe on iTunes, and also share with all the phenomenal women you know. Hey everybody, and thank you so much for joining us on this week's edition of Phenomenal Woman, where I am joined by Sarah Voyard. Now, Sarah, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and where you come from?
I know you are very interesting.
Thank you, Janice. I am so excited to be here with you today, and I'm excited to be able to connect with all of your wonderful listeners through this forum. So a little bit about myself. Like you said, I'm Sarah Voyard. I am a life coach. I specialize specifically in the empowerment of women so that they can get to a point where they really express their true authentic selves. I started my career about a decade ago in the spiritual coaching realm, which was very interesting. I worked with a lot of people that were looking to connect with a higher power. And that led me to a lot of different people from all walks of life. It was an absolutely amazing experience. And I got to learn and grow a lot, even personally, while I was coaching other people. However, during that process, I very quickly realized that it almost wasn't enough, you know? It almost wasn't enough because the connection or the lack thereof with a higher power or a sense of being, it was deeper than that. And typically it had to do with a person not being aligned with who they truly were and what they truly wanted out of life.
Right.
And that's how I transitioned on over to empowerment coaching, like I mentioned. I am a Venezuelan-born woman. I was born in Venezuela.
Okay.
And I am what is being termed now an Afro-Latina, if you will. That's a buzzword. That's a buzzword on TV right now.
You're very topical and trendy now, aren't you?
Absolutely. So, you know, I mean, I remember years ago there was no real term for us. And when I say us, I mean Latina women of African-American descent, which is what I am, because although I was born in Venezuela, Spanish is my first language. I'm very proud of where I'm from. My parents are actually from the Caribbean. They were born in Haiti.
Wow.
They were born in Haiti. They migrated over years later with two small children, and then they went on and built a brand new life, were there for almost two decades, had several more children there, and I was born there as well. So that is my heritage, if you will.
Okay.
And I currently own a company called SV Elite Coaching, which is where I do all my coaching out of. I'm very, very proud of it. It continues to grow and expand. And every day that I get to work with my amazing clients is a day that I become not only a better practitioner, but a better person overall.
Right, right. So what have been your key motivators for your career choice? Because you said you started this 10 years ago and you didn't wake up saying, "Hi world, I want to be a coach." I know I certainly didn't. So what have been your key motivators for moving into this field?
Well, that's an interesting question, Janice. And I would definitely say, like I mentioned, I started in the spiritual coaching world.
Right.
And much like you, I didn't wake up thinking I wanted to be a coach. I mean, you know, my parents wanted me to be a doctor, or, you know, a lawyer,
an
engineer.
Yeah, the Caribbean.
Right, you know? Exactly. Everybody has to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer, for sure. That's kind of what we're all destined to be, you know, coming from the Caribbean, right?
Yeah.
But my parents were very, very traditional and continue to be very involved in the church. And that placed me in the position to very, very early on, not only be exposed to very mature topics, but be exposed to an array of different people. So you can only imagine being in Venezuela. Again, we're from African descent, and then we moved to the States. We ended up in New York, to Miami.
Right.
And the melting pot of the U.S., you know, the melting pot of New York, of Miami, there was almost too much variety. And I say that in a good way.
Yes.
So with that amount of people from all walks of life, all places of the earth, we really had the opportunity to engage with a wide array of individuals that had so many different issues. And I remember as a child, my father is an elder and has been an elder for many, many years in the congregation.
Yeah.
And I remember as a child always seeing that my father constantly had people coming to him. And I was very keen. I was definitely that little girl always finding myself in the adult conversation.
Yeah.
And I just found them fascinating. And I started to very quickly pick up on patterns, you know. And one thing that I can say that is a blessing that I'm very appreciative and grateful for is my perception.
Right.
I'm not even going to take credit for that, you know. I have always been so extremely perceptive. And that keen sense of perception allowed me, like I just mentioned, to pick up on a lot of patterns of human behavior, human sentiment. You know, and motivators for people, that it got to the point where I started wanting to do the same. And as I continued to grow, I made sure that I was available and I was a listening ear for these members of the congregation.
Right.
And it became such an organic thing where people were just flocking to just have somebody to hear them in a non-judgmental, unbiased manner, but still be able to give practical advice.
Right.
And that's what I very, very quickly became. And I just really enjoyed it and was passionate about it. So much so that while I was in getting out of middle school, maybe joining high school, I really heavily considered becoming a psychologist.
Right.
Because of how much I enjoyed being a spiritual coach within the congregation. And as I continued to grow, it just continued to, you know, it was like a snowball. You know, it just got bigger and bigger, where people would always tell me, wow, it's just so easy to talk to you. I just feel comfortable. It was a conglomerate of random encounters with people where I would meet somebody and in 5 minutes I knew their whole life story. I swear to you, Janice, I would only say, hi, how are you? You have a beautiful shirt on. I just want to tell you, you look gorgeous. That's it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they would just pour their hearts. And I never understood why until people started telling me there's just this thing about you.
Yeah.
This thing about you that makes one so comfortable.
Yeah.
So it got to the point where I said, you know what? This looks about right for me. I'm going to make this something that I can live off of. And here I am.
So throughout that journey, what's been the most satisfying challenge you've overcome?
I'll definitely say, so I'm giving you all this story, right, about my spiritual, my beginnings as a spiritual coach.
Yes.
With that said, I got to a point in life where I had to make a lot of personal deep reflections and think to myself, am I really believing everything that's happening here?
Yeah.
Everything that's being said in the church, in my surroundings, what I'm seeing, am I kosher with it? Am I being true to myself?
Okay.
And I got to a very, very enlightening determination. And I say enlightening because it absolutely transformed my entire life. I'm talking from friends to complete social circles to education to everything. I got to the point where I realized that I needed to come into my own religious truth.
Right.
After all of that time that I had spent as part of that particular organization, I realized that my time there had expired.
Right.
There was a feeling of there's something else. I don't have that right now, but I know I'm going to go get it.
Even if
this is not it. So I would definitely say for sure that my most satisfying challenge to overcome has been coming into my own religious truth. The kind of religious truth that I feel completely comfortable endorsing and embracing. And it's so hard, especially when you come from a background where it's not only all you know up until, you know, becoming an adult, but it also has every sphere of your life.
Yes.
And when you think of even the possibility of every portion of your life changing, you automatically settle into fear.
Right.
It's scary.
Right.
It was a completely scary thought for me to think, oh my God, this is me having to start all over, having to build.
Yeah.
All over.
Yeah.
It was a huge challenge, but I decided I'm never one to shy away from a challenge. I said, you know what? I'll go for it because at the end of the day, if nothing else, I can say I was my most authentic self.
Yeah.
And that was enough of a consolation prize for me.
But it's something we as women in general really do find challenging, because for you, it was your spiritual awareness. For others, it may be the job they're in, it may be the relationship they're in, it may be their family. You know, it's a huge step. So how did you regain, because that must have been a tough, really tough period, because I would hazard a guess, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, that you really went against what your tradition, your family had been doing. So it would have been a tough situation to kind of navigate and say to family, this is what I want to do. So how do you maintain your confidence through those periods?
Well, that's an interesting point, and it's absolutely, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, if just so you can get an idea of how orthodox this particular organization is, when I decided to leave that organization, not only was my family that was in the organization distraught, but it also entailed being completely shunned by both family member, active family members, and all my entire social circle.
Wow.
Entirely shunned.
Yeah.
As in, like, they can't speak to you, they can't address you, they can't go see you. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, if you're close your family members. That's a really, really tough,
yes,
a tough thing.
Yes.
My confidence, the way that I keep and retain my confidence is by understanding, and this is even biblical, where it says that every person will individually render account to the Lord. And this is across the board, you know, even if one of our listeners was not a believer in God per se, in general, we can say that even in life.
Yes.
In the present moment, we render account for all of our choices and our behavior, and that comes in the form of consequences, does it not?
Yes, yes.
So for me, it's the thought that if I am going to render account for everything that I do individually, I might as well be doing something that I know and I feel is right. I cannot live on the coattails or hanging on to the skirts of someone else. Because when I have to suffer the consequences, who am I going to blame?
Very true. Sarah, I mean, I wanted to get, obviously, it's quite personally, it's quite a big thing for you from the family. How is it now with your family? Are you still kind of on the outside, so to speak?
Oh, absolutely. I am absolutely on the outside. And it's been a few years now. At this point, it's not something that affects me, you know, to the degree where it knocks me down. Yeah. I think one of the things that really, really helped me, and again, while I was in the organization, I spent years there seeing other people go through this in their own families, right?
Yes, yes.
And one of the things that was, I think, made it a lot easier for me, I really can't say that I had the worst experience when I decided to come into my own truth, was because I recognized, having been in the organization, it was almost like, I already knew what was going to happen.
Right.
I knew it was going, what I had seen happen to all of those other people, people that I grew up with, friends, acquaintances, neighbors, parishioners that I knew throughout all those years that went through the same experience, I knew I was going to get the same. For me, it is so important, just in the same sentence that I can tell you, be authentic to who you are. I respect other people's choice to do the same.
Right.
So if that is their choice, whoever it may be their parents, it may be you, the day of tomorrow, I respect your ability to exercise your free will.
Right.
And so for me, it was like, okay, I accept this. I respect people's belief systems. I respect people's choices, just like I want those to be respected on my end. So for me, it was just like, okay, well, this is a new chapter. I'm grateful for the clean slate that I have, and I'm going to make sure it's a damn good chapter. I would say if I could go back, I would not limit myself. I think there were a lot of significant things that I, because of my surroundings and my belief system at that time, I limited myself on accomplishing some things that I think now would have been significant, although I can't say that I regret them. And I say I don't regret them, because had I made those choices back then, I definitely would not be sitting here having this conversation with you now, right? This is a direct product of the decisions that we've made at some point. So, but when I say that, I mean, you know, and I'll give you a perfect example. I remember, like I told you, so I was deep into wanting to be a psychologist. And at that particular point, that specific religious organization was very big on promoting that after high school, you go get, you know, a trade or a very quick college degree so that you could use all your disposable time to dedicate yourself to the affairs of the kingdom, as they call it.
Yeah.
And that meant that a lot of teenagers did not get higher education, superior education. It wasn't necessarily something that they promoted really at all. And I had the benefit of doing really, really well in school. I graduated valedictorian. I was top of my class. It was great. And I got scholarships. And although I was able to use my scholarships to go to school locally down in Florida, one of the state colleges, I think that at that point, I definitely was limited by what the expectations were, and I didn't choose to go to some of the Ivy League colleges that I was accepted to. Again, I don't regret that, because that is a direct, I am a direct product of what has occurred in my life up to now. But my life would be very different, and I can only but imagine, right? Only but imagine, in a far, far away world, you know, what my life would be like, right, and the kinds of people I would have been exposed to had I taken those opportunities and not allowed anything else to limit me at that point. So that's just one example. But in general, if I could go back, that's what I would do. I would make sure that I didn't let anything limit me, including my own, you know, maybe negative thoughts or limitations. So I heard this once, and it's so simple, and you'll probably be super surprised, but I heard once on a radio show an individual say, it's not that serious.
Okay.
Honestly, and for some reason, I sat there, and it just struck me so much, and I said, that's it. That right there is going to be my mantra. And time again, it has always proven itself to be accurate. And this is how I personally interpret that, right? So yeah. Are there significant things in life that we have to take seriously, that we have to plan for, that we have to assign the proper value to? Absolutely, right? We want to be responsible, productive people, sure. But if you really think about it, we place a lot more importance on things than we need to. Case in point. Yeah. One of the things I work heavily with clients is people's need to always be okay with what other people think of them.
Oh, yes, yes.
It drives you absolutely insane. It will literally give you ulcers,
yes,
literally speaking, give you health issues. And you take it so seriously. You take it to heart. It hurts you. It changes your mood. Like I just said, it affects your health. All these things. You can literally look at a person and say, it is not that serious. Because I guarantee you the person talking about you doesn't really value you that much anyway. Yeah.
Seriously, most definitely.
It's just never that serious.
Yeah.
Even when I've gone through really significant challenges in life, and I look back and I'm like, okay, where is my life now? Most of the times I'm always in a better place anyway. Right. So even though that hurt, in the end, it really wasn't that serious.
Yeah. Or it could have been serious, but it's just that you choose not to make it affect you future down the line.
Listen, absolutely right. And you have to give it its proper place.
Yes.
I can't give an issue on a scale from 1 to 10 the 10th place, as in overwhelming and taking over my entire life structure. I can't do that. And that's one of the things that I stress to my clients. Understand the role that something, the place that something takes in your life, or the role that it has, and act accordingly.
You've been assertive, confident, and people think that you're bossy. And how do you deal with this and overcome it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think any woman that is energetic and hopefully successful has encountered this at some point. It's not in the home, in the workplace. Absolutely. What I do, again, going back to my mantra that it's not that serious, I'm not so concerned about people thinking I am bossy as I am concerned about making sure that when I am assertive and confident, I insert kindness and fairness in what I am saying or doing.
Okay.
If I can look back and visualize how I behaved, what I said, and see and know and feel that I was still kind and fair as I was executing those things, I'm okay.
Right.
Whether or not that is considered or thought to be bossy by other people. And most people, I have literally had people, and you know, these are the kinds of things that you experience in life that I don't take for granted. I have had people literally come and tell me, you know, when you said this or when you did that, I really felt the waves. But then when I went home and thought about it, I couldn't even argue. Because you were fair.
Yeah.
If I had been in your position, I likely would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
You were fair. And if nothing else, I can respect you for having been fair.
Yeah. I may not like what you said, and I may not like the decision you took, but when I look back on it, you were actually fair, you know. And you can't ask for more than that. You definitely can't ask for more. And sometimes we're so caught up in the fog anyway.
Right. No, I think you're absolutely right. And to add to that, the part that I mentioned about kindness is the sense of always respecting and keeping everyone else's dignity at the forefront of the way you behave and the decisions that you take that affect them and the way that you speak to them. I'm very, very big on that. You know, never be that person that treats a random person on the street better than you would treat, you know, your colleagues, your spouse, your children. You have to respect everyone's dignity, because that is something that you get at birth. That's a birthright. And no one, absolutely no one, has the ability or the right, rather, to treat you in an undignified manner. Of course, unless you allow them to. But you should never put yourself in the position or give off the impression that it's okay for people to treat you in a way that is not dignified.
So, Sarah, thanks for that. So my next question is, if you could choose your own mentor, who would it be and why?
You know, it's hard for me to answer that question, because I genuinely believe in being a lifelong learner and absorbing something from everyone that you meet.
Okay.
So it's hard for me to come up with one particular mentor, because I really do feel that everyone that comes into your life is a mentor of some sort.
Okay. Okay. It's nice.
That you can learn from, good, bad, or ugly. If I had to say maybe one, you know, popular person, and I know this might sound cliche, but I really do admire Oprah and what she's been able to accomplish. I feel like, you know, the more I get to know the background of her story and just some of the great things that she's doing now, like, you know, it seems like now she's getting more involved into acting. Her podcast is absolutely fantastic as well, just like this one.
Super Soul Sunday.
I really admire what she's been able to accomplish and the odds that she's been able to overcome.
Yes.
When she started her show originally, there was really no African American person, let alone a woman, doing something on that scale at all.
Very much.
And to think that at this point, that was well over 20 years. I mean, you know, I remember Montel, you know, the days of Montel when he had the show.
Yes.
Right? Everybody loved, you know, the tall, dark, and handsome Montel, right? But Oprah was doing her thing, you know, for significantly well before that. And every time she talks about the challenges that she had to overcome, how no one took her seriously.
Yeah.
No one took her seriously for a very long time. And she really pushed forward. And this was, mind you, before her personal background came to light.
Yes.
You know, the story about the child that she lost, you know, the sexual abuse that she had to endure, unfortunately. So to think of all that, I mean, you know, we talk about the struggles that one, women have, two, women trying to also have a career, three different races.
Yeah.
But can, you know, if we add on to that, it's significantly compounded when you're dealing with those kinds of personal demons. You know, people have bashed her a lot over the years about how she looks.
Yeah.
You know, she struggled with weight for a very, I mean, I'm talking to you and I'm actually visualizing, you know, all she's oscillated in weight so often over the years. She's gotten really thin. She's gotten a little bit heavier.
Yes.
You know, I remember when people were talking about her hair. You know, did she have hair?
Yeah.
And at one point then all her hair fell out because of all the treatments or other things that she put in her hair, then her natural hair all fell out. I mean, she's gone through quite a bit, and to think of where she is now, and there's a sense of humility that I still absorb and perceive in Oprah.
Right.
That above it all, that's what I would say I admire the most about her. So if I had to pick a popular mentor, one that people know, I'd definitely say her. Okay. And again, more than anything she's accomplished, if it's one thing I could take from her, is being able to remain simple and humble despite gaining success and exposure in this world, in the society.
Right, that's great. So you said you've given this many mentors, whoever comes across in your crosses your path in life. Who would you say recently would have taken that role outside of Oprah?
I would say most recently, there's a particular person that I've worked with for about a little 2 years plus, and she's a woman. And again, I am not one to necessarily advocate having a mentor that's a woman if you're a female as well.
Right.
I actually heavily believe in being mentored by people that are inherently different from you.
Yeah,
I'm a big believer in that. I would actually discourage going out and finding someone that you feel automatically that you have a lot in common with, or that you feel like you connect with, because I think that the people you learn the most from are people that are different from you. I think that opens up your eyes and your life avenues a lot more than necessarily people that are very similar to you. But this particular person happens to be a female, also working in a male-dominated industry, and has been able to soar to the level that many men are trying to get to and that the most successful men are at.
Right.
And when you meet her, she is the sweetest, most simple woman. And the reason why I appreciate that, her name is Leticia, the reason why I appreciate that is because she's also I think of Mexican descent, so she comes from an immigrant family, and I love to see women that don't change themselves. I feel like women in corporate America, especially when you get to certain levels, unfortunately change or feel they have to change. You know, you feel like you have to match up to the crassness or the assertiveness that maybe men display. I've even seen it where a lot of women even start to display very masculine energy and very masculine ways about them, because they spend so much time in this male-dominated industry. So to have a woman, she's now actually just recently announced her retirement, and to have this woman be in this, had been in this industry for over 20 years, and to still have retained her natural essence, I find to be such an admirable feat, because it's so hard. That is so hard to do. I've learned a lot from that, even in instances where I've experienced very challenging times, and I've been surrounded by, in this example, for example, males and very dominant, you know, personalities. I don't need to become like them.
Yes, yes.
To succeed.
Yes, yes, yes.
I don't have to become part of the norm to succeed. There is beauty and power in the way that I am, and that will come across naturally without me having to exercise this extra effort, energy, and time into trying to be liked or be like them or look similar so that they can accept me. Because see, that's where the problem lies.
Yeah.
We think that by becoming like them, we will be accepted. However, with women, what happens is very similar to one of the previous questions that you asked me, where instead of them saying, oh yeah, she's totally like us, like she's totally one of us, lots of times you end up being regarded as the bossy woman.
Yes.
The B-I-T-C-H, to not say it, you know?
Yes.
Or, you know, or people will literally say, oh, she's just trying too hard. It's not even cute.
Yeah.
So you end up doing all of that, and for what? And you lose yourself in the process.
It's a very difficult line, speaking from experience, because having worked in a male-dominated environment and being the senior role,
it is a difficult balance.
But I think once you remain true to yourself, it's a tough one. But authenticity, I think, maturity. And just being comfortable with who you are plays a major part in that.
That is correct. And that's one of the things that I find in this particular individual, Leticia. And funny enough, when she announced her retirement is when I asked her if she'd be willing to become a more of a formal mentor. Right. I asked her if I could have the honor, because I consider it an honor. But she didn't know that I had been absorbing all of this from her without her even knowing.
Yeah,
so this is what I'm saying about you don't need to have these like super formal experiences and it has to be one person. No, when you meet somebody and you're like, she's different, he's different, there's something special about them.
Yeah.
You can start to absorb those things from them immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. And I call that the power of the unconscious influencer, which we all are.
I love that.
Even you yourself, you know, somebody somewhere is watching you and how you move and what you do. So, you know, you don't realize it, but you're an unconscious influencer. And it's very, very powerful. So I always tell women, you know, I suppose it's the Jamaican saying, what good? You know, because you never know who's watching you, who's emulating you. Outside of if you're a mother, your children are the first people that start doing that. But when you get into work, when you get external surroundings, the same thing is happening, and just need to be very cognizant of that.
Absolutely. No, I'm a big believer in that as well. I think you've brought up a really good point. I remember reading a quote on someone's email one time that said that the things you do when no one's looking are the things that matter.
Yes. Yeah.
And I say that to say that you think there's no one looking, but there's always someone looking. Always. Even if they're not looking as in physically someone's looking at you, they can be overhearing you, which essentially could have the exact same effect.
Very much.
So don't think for a second that when you're in your office, you know, going off, talking to yourself, that somebody that's walking by, you know, that the intern, you know, the summer intern that's walking by, you have no idea how that could impact that intern for life.
Yes, 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 yes.
So you're completely right about being an influencer without even really knowing it, without being conscious of it.
Yeah.
It's a really good point.
Yeah. So, Sarah, what would you say? So what are the three things you'd say you've learned about yourself during your career?
Oh, that's a good one. So a couple of things that I know. I totally overtask myself.
Right. Okay.
I can do it all, and can't anybody tell me different. I can do it all day. There's 24 hours in a day, but I managed to create 28.
Right.
You know, and no one else can do it. This is of course what I'm thinking in my head, right? What my crazy head is telling me.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that I have that I've had to constantly channel and learn that it's okay not to be perfect. You know, I would say that I'm a perfectionist by nature. Right. It's okay not to be perfect. And it goes back to the mantra that you asked me for.
Yes.
It's okay not to be perfect because it's not that serious. That's why.
Right,
because it's not that serious.
Right.
So I place a lot more on myself than even society at times or my environment at times places on me.
Right.
That's one thing that I've definitely learned. Another thing that I would say has been a significant learning point for me was getting to the point where I realized that I am a people pleaser, and being a people pleaser can be good and bad if not properly curbed.
Yeah.
And I, you know, at first, and I think this is definitely, I would say from more the coaching on the spiritual side, you know, you get the sense that you're selfless, you know, you're caring, You're always thinking about other people, and that's very holy of you, right? Yeah, that's the general premise amongst that community. But in all reality, if you have a balanced view about it, you realize that it can actually be a sword to fall on if you don't know how to properly manage that. Right. It's one thing to help people to make sure, you know, to spend your time making sure that people are happy and content and satisfied and fulfilled, but you can never do that at the expense of yourself.
Yeah. So how do you get to that?
That's what happens with a lot of people.
So how do you get to that level? So how do you get that balance? It's a very delicate balance because you say, and one of the big challenges I know women, lots of women have with their confidence is that they people please. They don't want to hear no. They don't want to disappoint. They don't want to let down. So how do you maintain that balance?
That's a good question. And one of the things that I've, and clients have asked me that before, and one of the things that I urge them to do is to go to the people that they most care about, you know, let's say family members, your spouse, your best friends, and ask them what they actually expect of you.
Right.
There tends to be a gap between what we think people expect of us and what they actually expect of us.
Right, right.
I've had clients even go into the office with their supervisors, schedule a meeting, initiate a meeting where they sit down and do this exact thing. Because when expectations are unclear, that is where we get into hot waters.
Very much. Very much. Very much.
So the first key to all of this, Janice, is being very clear. Clarity is key. If you're clear, then act accordingly with what you know is a fact,
right,
not an assumption.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's how you maintain the balance. Right. Because you will quickly realize that those that really love you, those that you actually really, really care about, don't expect much from you more than support.
Yeah.
They want to see you happy, healthy, and they just want to have you around for years to come. That's not a lot to ask for.
No.
They don't need you to necessarily plan every single event, host everything at your house, clean up after the 100 people that came over, cook the turkey, the pork, you know, the pernil, the roast beef. You know, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And when you get clear with the expectations that are factual in your life, that's how you maintain or find that balance.
Excellent. So Sarah, you've learned those things about yourself, but what would you say your imperfections and how do you embrace them? You talked about being a perfectionist, but how do you embrace your imperfections?
Well, I can tell you I'm also impatient. Oh, yes, I am. I am impatient. One of the things that comes with perfectionism, and just like I mentioned, you know, my schooling and everything, I tend to be very quick at doing things.
Right.
But I tend to do them quick and do them well.
Yeah.
And I think that that's created a natural impatience in me where I'm looking at the next person like, okay, people, what's going on over there? What's going on?
Yeah.
Why are we not? Okay, let's move forward.
Yeah.
So I'm naturally impatient. And I don't think I had known that until my very, very close friend brought it to my attention years ago.
Well,
and I was
friend.
Like, oh, that's interesting.
That's a good friend.
Yeah,
a really good friend.
Well, absolutely. I am adamant about only surrounding myself with individuals that I can use as sounding boards and that I can literally go to give me a sanity check.
Right.
Just yesterday, I went to a friend, a very dear friend of mine, and I said, I know I'm going to say this to you, and I know that you're going to think I'm crazy, but this is exactly why I'm coming to you, because you're going to tell me I'm crazy and I'm being impatient. And sure enough, I was like, I want X, Y, and Z. And she was like, yeah, you're totally overdoing it. You have better things to think about, focus. And I'm like, see, this is why I keep you around. That's all I needed.
Excellent.
I needed to be pushed back in the box. Thank you. So that impatience, I embrace it because as much as I would catalog it definitely as an imperfection.
Yeah.
It also is something that fuels me to never sleep on anything, you know, okay, figuratively speaking. Yeah. Yeah. So for example, when opportunities come my way, oh, I'm not sleeping on it. Yeah. I'm on it immediately. I don't let life just go by, just strut on by.
Yeah.
You know, opportunities come our way and I'm like, that sounds really good. I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
And then when you come back, the opportunity is no longer present. And I recognize that that quality has actually been that and my perfectionism have been very significant parts of where and why I am where I am today.
Right.
So I embrace them by understanding how, in a positive sense, they have enabled me to become the person that I am.
Okay.
And because I love who I am, that's why I'm able to embrace those imperfections.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. And you mentioned earlier that you managed to fit 28 hours into a 24-hour day. So what would be your advice for maintaining some sort of balance in your life? I won't say work-life balance, but you know, but there's sometimes you have to have a bit of downtime, bit of self. I'm very big on self-care. So how do you make sure that you don't neglect yourself or the persons around you, or make time for yourself as well?
Ah, that is so hard, and I feel like I've gotten a little more skilled on that in the last few years. But when I was younger, get out, I was not good at that at all. I mean, I'll be honest, I just wasn't, and I think that now that I've gotten much better at it, my biggest advice,
yes,
like I just mentioned, surround yourself by people that will check you, that will hold you accountable.
Yeah.
I'm really big on that. So whether it's, again, your spouse, your best friend, a mentor, somebody at work, whether it's if you don't have any of that, which that is a lot of people in the society, believe it or not, take the time out to really try to get a coach.
Yeah.
Honestly, somebody that will hold you
accountable.
Very much. I think it's also important to write things down. I'm a big calendar girl. Right. I know that a lot of other people are also like still, you know, big to-do list kinds of people. I'm a big calendar girl. So it'll be interesting when people look at my calendar for whatever reason and they're like, you actually have to schedule reading and going to sleep? I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not that bad.
I'm telling you, I am totally the calendar girl, like the quintessential calendar girl.
Yeah.
Because I have to set little timers because, again, I'm doing so much and I'm multitasking at the same time that the hours go by without me realizing. I seldom feel or realize that it's 11 o'clock.
Wow.
So if I don't have that little timer going off and say it's 11 o'clock, I will go until 12:01 and they say, oh my God, I only have like, you know, 6 hours to sleep now. And then I'm rushing to shower, rushing to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And then mind you, I still have a lot of things on my mind. So then it's still taking me an hour and a half to actually shut it down.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff, that has been important, to have something in writing and to have people to physically hold me down and say, no, that's not what you have to do. That's not what you set out to do, and hold me accountable. And I don't get upset. So that's another important thing. Don't start doing these things only to get upset at the people that are just fulfilling and executing what you ask them to do. Because I've seen people do that.
Yeah.
And that's not fair. You need to understand that if you're not meeting the mark and these people are holding you accountable, on the contrary, you need to be grateful that these people are looking out for your best interest. And plus, especially if you ask them to do that. So don't get mad at people.
Yeah.
Write something down. Put something into place. I'm very big on not necessarily having to do huge things. But for example, for women, schedule your weekly manicures and pedicures.
Yeah.
Schedule them. Yeah. Have your standing Saturday appointment with your favorite nail tech that is going to see you Saturdays at 4 o'clock. You can spend a solid 4 hours sitting in a little massage chair, you know, have her do your nails, your hands and your feet, have it be something where you get out of the house and you're forced to relax.
Yeah.
And that was little things.
And even the little things, I mean, because sometimes I'm used to the 4 hours, like for parents and stuff like that, you know, I have a little morning ritual on my own, you know, so even if it's 20 minutes for yourself in the morning to have that short walk, just to clear your head, to grab that coffee, to read a chapter in your book, you have to make it a priority. And like you said, schedule it. One of the things I used to do when I was in the corporate world is that I would find myself starting work at 8 o'clock, working through to 8 o'clock the same evening, and I've not had a break in between. So I actually scheduled lunch in my diary. You know, I actually had it as a standing appointment, and that hour was that, and I'd force myself to come out of the office, not make meetings, but just to get a clear head to get through the day. But that was my time. Now I'm self-employed, working as a coach. I have my mornings, and I don't work before 9 o'clock. Well, not physical work. I would read. I have my 4 hours: read, write, run. I can never remember this, or ride my bike. So I'll do a combination.
Nice.
But now I've added yoga, which I'm actually getting into. So yes, so that's my me time, and my husband respects that. He knows, you know, that I'll be okay after that. It sets me up for the day.
Right, and that's so important. See, you have all of those aspects that are necessary. You have the motivation, you have the support on the other end, and then you're actually executing it. That's perfect. I mean, that's perfect. And again, it doesn't have to be, I feel like when people ask this question, they already have this, they're already in the mental space that it's a daunting task.
Yes.
That it's basically like impossible.
Yeah.
And it's really not. Again, it's not that serious. And little things go a long way.
Yes.
They go a long way with how the effect that they have on your psyche and on your body.
Yes, yes. Well, Sarah, it's been great having this conversation with you. And I'm down to my last couple of questions. So my next question would be, what's your definition of success?
One quick sentence. It is the full embrace of yourself and the life that you have. That's all I got for you. That's success
Literally.
To me.
That's
whatever, great. Whichever that, however that looks, is different. And one thing that I really discourage people from doing is to attributing what they consider to be success to the person next to them.
Yeah.
That is the worst mistake we can make.
Yeah.
You cannot look at a woman, and I feel like we do this a lot with women, you know, amongst ourselves, and it really bothers me. The professional corporate woman who is a high-powered attorney at 40, but has no kids, cannot look down on the woman that decided to be a stay-at-home mother and has been out of the workforce for the past 20 years because she's been raising 4 amazingly competent, productive citizens of society in her children.
Right.
If that is success for her, if she has fully embraced herself and her life as a stay-at-home mother, an amazing wife, that is success just as much as the high-powered 30, 40-year-old attorney making $250,000 and traveling the world.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Most definitely.
It is the same thing. So if you fully embrace yourself and the life that you have reached success.
Excellent. And lastly, what does it mean to you to be your own hero?
It means knowing that I already have everything it takes to achieve true success and happiness. It's in me.
Yeah. Nice. Well, that was my last question, so thank you for that. So, Sarah.
Oh, Janice, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
No, you're welcome. But if people want to, if our listeners want to get hold of you, how can they do that?
Absolutely, very easily. You can go on my website, www.svelitecoaching.com, or you can reach me on social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, at svelitecoaching.
Excellent. And I'll put all the links in the show notes. So without further ado, thank you so much for your time, Sarah. And thank you. Good night.
Thank you so much for having me. This was such a privilege. And I really, really wish you all the best of luck and continued success in everything you do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Sarah. As I said, I told you it would be lively and it'd be very interesting subject. Now, finding your own truth, I thought that was really poignant, that thing that came out of that conversation. And we really do struggle sometimes to really find and identify who we are and, I suppose, want a better word, live up to it. Now, and finding our truth can be something that we really need to have the confidence to do that. So there are a couple of things you probably could look at doing when you want to really understand or living your truth. The first thing is to accept who you are right now at this moment. Now, and that's key. So because accepting who you are and accepting the struggles you are is how you will face life. You may not be like it and you may be disappointed, but it's okay. The first thing you need to do is just really, really accept who you are before you can actually start looking at how you progress for the future for a better you. Secondly, is acknowledge who you are. Who are you? What do you stand for? And it's wonderful being you, and just really embrace the true you and stop hiding behind past definitions that people may have given you. Let yourself break free from the cocoon that you are, from the little butterfly that you are, and that's really, really fly. Thirdly, define your truth. This takes a little bit of work because finding out your true path, as the conversation with Sarah revealed, it's a really tough journey. In reality, you already know it, but for whatever reason, because you fear judgment, you've had previous definitions, you spent your whole lifetime denying it, you really have buried that truth within inside of you. So stop, just take a listen to your inner self, and you'll become aware of the truths that are there within you. And finally, live loud and proud. Be proud of who you are. Accept it. Embrace yourself. I know it takes confidence. And if you want some help doing that, I am here to help. That's what I do. I help women like you embrace their confident self. So if you're ready, just feel free to reach out to me at janicesutherland.com or info@janicesutherland. And we can have a discussion as to how I can help you reveal the inner truth of who you are and really connect with your confidence. Until next week.